From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is a podcast from the archives of The Fischko Files, on radio since 1999. I'm Sarah Fischko. Each week, I put together a personal essay on music, art, culture, or media. You can hear all of The Fischko Files, plus some of my one-hour documentaries and special programs, on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Star performer Chick Corea sat in the audience at a music festival last summer and just listened to his own string quartet. He was unaccustomed to being just the composer, sitting on the sidelines, so he found other ways to get involved with the performance.
The viola player said to me, you know, you think we ought to wear tuxes tonight? And I immediately said to him, you know, tuxedos are the death of music. And he and the other three guys cracked up, you see, because it's true. And then I also suggested that they talk to the audience a bit. Just tell them what the piece was about or whatever, you know. So they did that night and said something about, hey, you can relax. And, you know, back in chamber music days, salon days, people used to clap and have fun. So have fun. And the audience clapped between movements and stood up at the end of the string quartet with a standing ovation. And it was quite fun, you know.
It is more common to find Chick Corea himself center stage as performer and improviser. From his work with Miles Davis in the 60s, through his Return to Forever band, through his duets and trios, jazz, fusion, his groups, both electric and acoustic, he's been a kind of musical chameleon. As the cliche goes, the only constant in his musical life has been change. Oh, and one other thing, the piano. He always comes back to the piano, which he plays with a kind of magical skill after rebellious beginnings.
I didn't practice a lot when I was a kid. My father once tried to get my agreement for me to practice like 45 minutes a day on the piano. And because of the stricture of it, I just used to dash out of the house, and he'd be chasing me down the stairs and stuff. So he stopped trying to do that, I remember.
Still, thanks to his father, Armando, there was always music at home.
My dad had a band with musicians around him. That was what was in the house, was musicians. And they used to come back to the house after the gig, and my mother would make them some food. And I'd always want to be there to hang out with them and have frittata. Eggs and potatoes.
Mixing with the aroma of frittata, the sounds of their jazz record collection. Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie.
The Billy Eckstein Big Band, Art Blakey on drums, and Miles's early music.
And Bud Powell. Even at 8 years old, Corea knew Powell was a real original. And he knew that about Miles Davis, too, from early recordings. Later, when they played together, his instincts were confirmed.
Miles never asked for agreement about what he was going to do. He would try things and he would change things and just go ahead and create, really, without wondering whether it fits the form.
This was a pretty eye-opening influence for a young player. Corea was in his late 20s when he worked with Miles, and to hear him tell it, he just picked right up and began to live that kind of musical life himself.
You have a general plan. You say, yeah, I like to make music, rather than going into the mechanics of it and say, well, can I get a gig doing that, or will people like it, or what will the magazines think, and blah, 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 blah. You just say, well, I like to do this, and you go ahead and do it, like an improvisation.
He has improvised himself into some beautiful partnerships, like the one with Gary Burton, for example, the model of a seamless collaboration. And in the late 70s, after he'd achieved great fame with his fusion band Return to Forever, he went back to the piano again with an equally famous partner, Herbie Hancock.
He visited my house in L.A. one time, and I had two grand pianos in the living room, and we began to fool around.
If you're listening in stereo, that's Hancock on the left, Corea on the right.
one of the tacit agreements that we had as a partnership was we would just happily accept what the other guy was doing. In other words, Herbie would lay some stuff down at the piano, and I would just take it and use it and compliment it. And he would do the same with me. You just take whatever it is and you use it well.
That could almost be his motto, take whatever it is and use it well. He did it with Mozart, too, by teaming up with the classical pianist Friedrich Gulda and gave himself a new challenge.
I thought, well, now I'm going to play Mozart, so I should learn something about playing the piano differently. Until I realized the thing to do was to continue to do what I was doing, which was play the piano in the same way that I would play any composer's music, Bud Powell, Monk, Bartok. When I finally realized that my own idea of Mozart was the one to put forward, then Mozart began to flow.
The latest thing Chick Corea has taken and used is more controversial than Mozart, however, and has some of his admirers scratching their heads, and some downright upset. His newest piece revolves around writings of L. Ron Hubbard, founder of Scientology. Corea is devoted to Hubbard's ideas. Around this new work, he's reunited his electric band. Hard to say how this will stack up against his past and future preoccupations, but he's reached a point now where listeners familiar with his work will follow him almost anywhere, as long as there's music involved. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko. Thanks for listening to today's podcast from the archives of The Fishko Files from WNYC New York Public Radio. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member today at WNYC.org. See you next week for another installment of The Fishko Files from WNYC New York Public Radio.